Chapter 12, ADHD and Social Niceties. The reason self-identification or self-diagnosis can be difficult for people with ADHD is that we typically lack self-awareness. I knew when I offended coworkers, but did not always understand how or why. I was afraid to ask, worrying it would make them even more annoyed if they believed that the reason for their annoyance was evident. For example, the secretary where I worked had an attitude whenever I asked her for something. I don't believe she acted huffy and put upon with other employees. She did not sigh, grimace, and shake her head with them as she did with me. She did not get up slowly to fulfill their requests, only with my requests. I wondered, is it this request, or was it something I said or did much earlier that offended her, and I have been in her bad graces ever since? I became reluctant to ask her for anything, even when she was the only one who knew where the copier paper was. If I had to guess why I annoyed her, it would be my forgetfulness of the simplest tasks. If I didn't perform a task often, no matter how simple, I forgot how to do it. More than once, I needed her to show me how to use the copier. More than once, I asked her if she had a pen I could borrow because I had left mine in my office upstairs. Medication can make us more aware of how others perceive us, but it rarely eliminates the problem. I thought I had reasonably good relations with the admissions director when I worked at the retirement home. It was a shock to me when she wrote me a note at the urging of her therapist a few years after she retired. "You often made me feel uncomfortable and inadequate. I'm relieved that I can finally write this note and tell you. I'm glad I no longer work with you." What she wrote hurt me, but I put it out of my mind by telling myself she was too sensitive. She took anything I said too much to heart. I don't like everyone, and everyone doesn't like me. However, people with ADHD delude themselves when they believe, "I'm fine. It's my friends or work associates who have problems." When I got a less than stellar review from the manager of my multidisciplinary team, I found it easy to dismiss what she said about my work because I did not respect her. We justify why we did something a certain way and do not understand why others have a problem with what we did. For example, if I join a group collating the pages for a booklet and notice that they are doing it inefficiently, I might say, "This would be much faster if we laid the pages out this way." Then I take over, presuming that everyone wants to do the job more efficiently. However, usually I'm wrong, and I impose my values on them. They had not asked me to make collating more efficient. They enjoyed the slow work pace that allowed them to chat with one another, so they were resentful when I imposed a new system on them. I recently volunteered to help at an organization and noticed that the staff person did not have a list of what she needed to review with new volunteers. Several items, like where to park the car and how to record my hours, were not explained to me. When I asked about these items days later, she realized she had forgotten to tell me. That is when I suggested she make a list for new volunteers. She was irritated by my suggestion. Perhaps my tone of voice, a combination of impatience and irritation, led to a poor reception for what I thought was a helpful suggestion. Steve has often said to me in an irritated voice, "It's not what you say, but how you say it." Although I have not heard that remark from him for years. Progress! Yay! The language of social niceties does not come naturally to me. Once I was at the bank with Jackson when he was about 12, and afterward he asked me why I was so mean to the teller. I didn't know what to say. I interacted with her in my usual way, not unpleasantly, just efficiently. The daily pleasantries of smiling and asking, "How is your day going?" take a conscious effort on my part. Often I find social niceties like, "Have a wonderful day," or "Let's get together soon," to be stupid and meaningless. Why bother saying them? I find it difficult to say things I don't truly feel or believe. Other times, I am not immediately in touch with my feelings or my thoughts, so I don't express myself well in the moment. that might be why I prefer to communicate my thoughts in writing. Verbal communication requires a faster processing speed than writing. Sometimes I feel like I never got the owner's manual. I miss essential information on how to operate in life. Often, girls and women with undiagnosed ADHD learn to expertly cover up or hide their natural personalities, to conform and fit in. It is believed that masking delays or prevents an ADHD diagnosis and erodes a person's self-esteem, because with masking, they lose a sense of self. I had not heard of masking until this year, and because I lacked social awareness about what to do to fit in, I doubt I ever masked. This is a strange example that occurred years after I was diagnosed with inattentive ADHD. Still, it is when I was truly struck with the belief I lack basic information that other women, my comparison group, are born with. They instinctively know how to be socially correct and acceptable. And what's more, they seem to enjoy it. I was hiking with friends at Mount Rainier National Park and went to use the restroom. I noticed a woman's feet in the stall next to mine. Her feet were turned not towards the door, but the back wall. I wondered, what is she doing? Then I saw only one foot on the floor and heard the toilet flush. Oh, she pushed the toilet's handle with her other foot. How did she know to do that? When I asked my friends about it, they were astonished. My hiking friends assumed everyone knew what I wondered about. Everyone, that is, but me. Here is another example. Although I will sound dull-witted, I am committed to full disclosure. One time, a friend stopped by my house, and we stood in the doorway chatting. Then she left. Afterward, I wondered why didn't Mary come in to visit for a while. Then, duh, I thought, because you didn't invite her in. That is what women do, as well as suggest a cup of coffee or a glass of wine. Another relationship problem that people with ADHD face is that we long for the intimacy that comes with deeper friendships, but we do not understand or employ the expected steps to create those friendships. Caroline McGuire, M.Ed., says that adults with ADHD try to rush their relationships. We ignore the stages necessary for establishing an intimate relationship and overshare more than is appropriate. We frighten off those we want to befriend. Social niceties have their place in fostering lasting friendships, and we ignore them at our peril. People with ADHD find engaging in the expected social chit-chat, the first stage in developing a friendship, boring. Here are comments from adults with ADHD posted at reddit.com/ADD. Small talk can be profoundly dull. My brain wanders off. Yesterday, I talked with a friend with ADHD about how typical conversations go. One person says his whole monologue, and then the other person says her entire monologue. The monologuing gets so boring, it's hard for us to stay engaged. We prefer conversations where people interrupt with interesting tidbits, making the conversation more engaging and exciting. Our preferred way of communicating is perfectly acceptable, although there are settings where we need to reel in our enthusiasm and engage in more socially acceptable ways. One winter's day, I went cross-country skiing with two new female friends. I was tired, so I rested on the back seat of the car on the drive home, while the other two women sat in the front seat and happily chatted the whole drive home. I listened off and on to their 90-minute conversation and realized I could never talk about those topics for that length of time and with so much interest. My following thought was, and I wouldn't want to. I recalled a few luncheons where I needed to hold up my end of the conversation, and realized I was exhausted after these luncheons without understanding why. Now I knew, just like my experience taking the TOVA when I was not medicated for my ADHD, maintaining a conversation that was not interesting was stressful and wore me out. I don't judge people who enjoy light social conversation. while recognizing that it is not for me. To give you a flavor of the kind of conversations people with ADHD find engaging, here's an example from a post on Reddit. Because the responses to the post are written, no one could interrupt, but in person, it is another matter. Interruptions are expected when we talk with each other, as they add to the conversation's excitement, intensity, creativity, and flavor. Here is the post. My boss, who knows about my ADHD, shows me the abandoned cellar at work and says, "Explore this for me." 3 photos of the cellar accompanied the post, and the post received 630 comments. Here are a few of the comments that stayed on the topic. No fair! My ADHD only got me on Adderall! You get an abandoned cellar? Dang, my bosses have never found me a cool abandoned cellar to explore. Your boss knows how to harness an ADHD brain. Look, a box full of unlabeled booze and tangled Christmas lights. My fear of wound infections is battling my ADHD's desire to explore things. We have tetanus vaccines. Get yourself some unnecessary injuries. Oh, God, things to label and things to untangle? Sign me up! And there were numerous unrelated comments inserted along the way about Edgar Allan Poe, the House of Usher, armadillo sherry and its tastiness, spelunking, ape caves in Washington State, asbestos, mold, dogs, and wearing masks. After over 400 posts, someone wrote, OMG, what? I love this, and I didn't know I needed it. Then the initial poster commented, well, that was a fun read through the comments. I wasn't expecting so much enthusiasm. Being socially appropriate is not easy for me. When I become engrossed in what I am saying, I don't perceive the other person's lack of interest. I recall a dinner Steve and I had with another couple at a restaurant in Seattle. It was our first time together, and I openly talked about personal issues, such as family problems. I overshared. When I finished speaking, I expected the other couple to return with something equally revealing and personal. Instead, they sat there with their eyes glazed and their mouths shut. The quiet at the table became awkward for all of us. It was not an evening to remember. My lack of self-awareness made me unable to examine my actions and say, this is ADHD behavior. However, when I looked at Bruce's behaviors, I realized I did many of the same things. The things he did that annoyed me were things I also did. When I analyzed my son's annoying behaviors, I understood how I annoyed others. For example, he became argumentative when he wanted something I didn't want him to have. Just as I reasoned with Steve why we should do something a certain way, i.e., the way I thought we should do it. When Bruce forgot a commitment he made or decided the commitment was no longer important to keep, he might or might not call to explain. He believed it was no big deal that he let me down. Similarly, if I became overwhelmed with too much going on in my life, even though it was my fault I had too much going on, I expected those I let down to understand and forgive. I asked, "Why are you making it a big deal?" These behaviors make us appear selfish to others, yet we never think of ourselves as selfish. Our priorities change, and we do not understand why someone else has a problem with that. We believe, incorrectly, that it would not upset us if someone acted like that. When I am with a group and have an idea about what the group should do, I have gotten feedback from Steve that I come across as forcing my will on the group. If they do not have any ideas about what to do, I will make suggestions. I don't feel like I am deciding for the group, but Steve says it seems like I am. When I observed the time-consuming ways that many decisions are made in groups, I realized I get impatient with obtaining input from everyone before proceeding. I believe this is why many people with ADHD prefer to work independently, make their own decisions, or be in charge so they are expected to decide for others. I have an impulsive tongue. I speak before I think. Every Tuesday, unless it's raining, I bicycle with members of the Tacoma Wheelmen. We are a group of retired or semi-retired folks, and our chief consideration each time is where will we eat lunch? A few weeks back, a younger person in excellent cycling shape joined us. When we commented on his fitness, he responded that he weighed 220 pounds 2 years ago, and now he weighed 165. He became a vegetarian, he told us, because he had ulcerative colitis. At one point, he mentioned his wife was Korean and that he ate kimchi, a spicy cabbage dish. That is when I blurted out, "That's what probably caused your colitis." I didn't realize this was an inappropriate thing to say. One club member immediately said, "Cynthia!" Another added, "I can't believe you said that." Not catching on, I defended myself. "No, really, have you ever tried that stuff?" Now, looking back, I ponder my faux pas. Why didn't I realize this was the wrong thing to say? Why did I become defensive instead of immediately apologizing? The young guy never came back to ride with us. Were my comments the cause? What does everybody else know that I don't? And when will I learn? Myth: ADHD results from bad parenting. How do critics explain that the same parents challenged to raise their child with ADHD are often model parents for their children without ADHD?